I'm Chad Rutherman.
And I'm Andy Kinnick.
And welcome to No Clip Pocket, entertainment for men. Today, we're going to be talking about Pseudo Regalia, a game that was developed by, developed and published by Ritzler, and was released in 2023 on Windows.
But first, if you give us a like or a rating, it would be greatly appreciated.
All right, so Pseudo Regalia is a platformer Metroidvania game that was released last year as sort of like, I believe it started as a Game Jam game. I don't know if you have fact-checked this.
That is true. It was like a month-long Game Jam.
That's what it was, yeah. And really, like, picked up a lot of steam. And we'll get into why that is for sure. I do want to mention very quickly that this is also the last game that we had planned for our, like, Souls-likes month that we were doing. And by far is the most spurious example within. Like, it is the least Souls-like of any of the games that we talked about. But it definitely does still have, like, some of those elements. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who were just, like, designated Souls boys picked this game up as like a sort of spiritual entry.
Yeah, it's Miyazaki March. Yeah, it just has to be a little bit related in one way or another.
Right, which is that we could have played any game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, as we all know. Yeah, so I think the place to start, I mean, there's numerous places that we could start. I think the first meaty topic, though, to discuss really is just like the thing that made this game popular, the thing that made this game sort of like take off is really just its movement system, which is like ridiculously robust and features a lot of things. And the things that people like to talk about, which are things that the game doesn't explicitly tell you can do, but you can like figure out how to do, people, myself included, love that shit. Like, you love just figuring a cool thing out. So I don't know. Is that, would you say that that was also the draw for you, or do you think there were other elements that more elevated the game from nothing?
I'm not sure. Like, because I don't think it was like the draw for me. Like, just the fact that it was a 3D platformer was enough for me to want to play it.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it is the thing that stands out, I think, right off the bat. It feels good right away in the way like not a lot of games do. I do think like that's a fair thing. Like, that's going to be the thing. And it was the thing that made the game like take off initially and made the developer decide to make it into a full game. So,
yeah. It is. It's just a, it is a very fluid system that the upgrades that you get really help make it like feel more fluid than other Metroidvanias. I know what I'm trying to say. I just am not wording it well. I feel like I love the way that every ability that you get in this, with a couple of exceptions, are movement abilities exclusively. Because you get the, or even not exclusively, there are some that are both attacks and movement tech, but still, it means that that the design of each level is much more focused on just like the playable space. So there's less things that you get that are just essentially keys to doors. So you're not picking up missiles and stuff. And if I find this thing that looks like that, you do get that in the form of, I don't know what it's called, the strike move that like lets you break walls. But even better than the strike move that you had before. And it like, that is an ability that doesn't really interact with the rest of the world in the same way. But like most of the time you pick up stuff, like the moment you get the ability to glide on walls, it's like, it's over. Like you can now just do like anything. And it feels really good to have that freedom. And so I did really like sort of how the systems were all built up.
Yeah. And it feels like it really leans into being a platformer in the way that like, not a lot of things have, I think, since like the N64 PS1 era. Because, yeah, like, as you said, like, there aren't missiles or like power-ups or items or collectibles to get. Yeah, you pick up some keys here and there to like open locked doors, but like that's it. It's, yeah, all the gameplay is about just moving around. You know, like, you're not firing any wacky guns or trying to collect any jiggies or anything like that. Like, it's, you're just trying to like get to new places.
Yeah, I want to call out, and this I would consider this, yes, a recommendation, a game recommendation for people listening, but also not really as a game recommendation, more as like a mind calming software recommendation. There's a game that came out like, god, probably over a decade ago at this point, that was called Refunct, which is like defunct but with an R. And it takes like, I don't know, 5 to 15 minutes to finish. But it is just like a platformer game, a 3D first person platformer where you just like jump around in a small zone. And there's like a little bit of movement tech, but mostly it's like pretty simplistic. And it feels very chill to sit down and play. And this game gave me a similar feeling because, like you said, not a lot of games recently have embraced the 3D platformer in terms of like what actually makes it a strong genre, and one that has like more depth to it. Like, we both really liked Hat in Time,
right?
Which is a game that embraces sort of the collect-a-thon style of 3D platformer. But the fact that this is more of an embrace of the mechanical elements of the 3D platformer is something that is much more rare.
Like, A Hat in Time doesn't like demand like the kind of like precision or understanding of your moveset that this does.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It honestly, like, this makes me feel, when I'm playing it, the experience of playing it gives me more of a feeling of something like Neon White than it does Banjo-Kazooie. Like,
yeah.
That's, and despite the difference in perspective, like, I am feeling like, oh, like, I am looking at a problem and trying to figure out how I'm going to solve it with the tools available to me. Which I guess is a description of how all video games are, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. there were moments in this that kind of felt reminiscent to, like, Ghost Runner to me, where mm-hmm. I would come across a new challenge and be like, oh god, like, this is gonna suck ass to do. But it was doable. Or I didn't have the right ability and tried it for a while and then left. But but given that the movement system is so robust, did you find this game to be like difficult? I know you beat it like 2 hours faster than I did, so I feel like you probably had an easier time than me.
Get fucked. No, I would say that I didn't find it particularly difficult. I did. There's only one part that I really like banged my head against, and it was so stupid. You know the hallway full of swinging axes mm-hmm. that eventually leads into, I don't remember what, I think the theater.
Yeah, I know the hallway, yes.
Yeah. I got through, did I? I think I spent like 30 minutes, or maybe less than that, I'm not sure. Like two or three runbacks from the save point, trying to get over that before I had the ability to glide on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to like use the ability to kick off of enemies on the the swinging blades to like continue across, and I remember being like, this seems like a much steeper rise in difficulty than anything else, which is what made me sort of realize like I'm not supposed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then just my inherent stubbornness made me want to keep trying to do it just to see if I could, and I'm like reasonably certain that I could if I continued at it. I think that it is possible to make that, but I left and came back later. Otherwise, yeah, I found most of the difficulty at the beginning of the game before you had a lot of abilities, because there was a lot of, and I don't even know if you would qualify this as difficulty, but like it, there are a lot more things that you had to judge if you were able to do rather than actual execution, where you're like, is this even possible with what I have, or do I need to leave and find something else? But I'll talk about that a little bit more when it comes to like Metroidvanias in general. So, mm-hmm. So I would say no, I didn't find it that hard.
Yeah, I found it like, I think it's a combination of the platforming being kind of tricky, and also like the game kind of feels like you get a short little tutorial, and then it just kind of feels like you're dropped into like the middle of a Metroidvania. Like for some reason, it feels kind of like it's missing like some build up or like an ease in, because like you just automatically have like six different ways you can go. And like you're not sure like what kind of jumps you can make and like which areas to explore. So like for me, like the middle of the game, like I had a similar experience where I got to that guillotine hallway, and I got to the other one where you like have to like, it's another bendy hallway that leads to like the same area, I think, that you jump into a bubble and then you're supposed to like wall ride along and then jump and wall ride along another wall, jump to another bubble, and it's like this big long hallway that you had to go to cross. I got to those like towards the middle of the game and had like no idea where to go, and like tried those forever and got like kind of close to like almost getting them which made me like not know if I should leave or not. So like,
yeah,
for me, like, and also like I know I sent you a snap of me like not being able to make this particular jump that in the end is a really easy jump. But, like, the wall kick is, like, way more involved than wall kicks usually are in games. Like, you have, like, a lot of control over it. And, like, you could just kick the wall from way further away than I thought. So, like, right. There was, like, the kind of, like, depth or, like, range of, like, the movement tech just took a while to click with me in the middle, which I think, like, I had a session in the middle of the game. You know, like a 2 or 3 hour play session where I was just like not really having fun with it because I was like, I don't know where to go. I hadn't quite gelled with the mechanics yet. But then I did crest that hill. And then after that, it was like pretty smooth sailing because there was still some hard stuff. But I was thoroughly enjoying it after that.
Yeah, it is interesting because like there's a lot of stuff built into each mechanic that play differently than you might expect them to. Like the wall kick you mentioned has a ton of different functions in the game because it can get you higher, it can get you slightly further, it can change your orientation in the air, all kinds of shit. And then, yeah, built into it, the further away you are from the wall when you land the kick, the higher you go,
mm-hmm.
and like as that's like a part of the mechanic, which is an incredibly difficult thing to keep track of, especially when you're like flying through the air at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and are like, okay, now I'm gonna wall kick off this thing that's coming up. But I will say, getting used to it and like mastering the ability does feel really satisfying. There's there are a lot of times that I would look at an obstacle, see the intended path, and say, like, is it possible for me to skip this part and just, like, jump up there? And, like, sometimes it is. In fact, probably way more times than I actually accomplished it, mm-hmm. it was, but I just didn't do it. I get that. I think it's a thing that takes a long time to kind of, like, get a hold of. But once you do get a hold of it, it does feel really good. Though I will say, and this is what I was alluding to talking about a little bit ago, you bring up a great point, and that is that this game does feel very overwhelming at that, like, midpoint area.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot, because, like, the game doesn't actually even tell you what your goal is.
Yeah. I was thinking of Tunic. Like in the beginning, it gives you like a list of things to accomplish before it mm-hmm. takes the training wheels off. I feel like this game needed that.
Yeah, I don't remember where you see the reference to the princess first. And it's like, oh, the essence of the princess or whatever. And you have to get the 3 solar abilities of the sun or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's the castle, like, or the tower, I mean. has like a little tower thing in front of it that says that.
Yeah, but when I got there, I was like 100% sure that I had read that somewhere else at some point.
Probably.
Yeah, like I think it does foreshadow that, but I got there and I was like, am I at the end of the game? Like, because this was the one thing that I had been told existed. And when I got up to the tower and got the... Well, it gets worse for me because I got the thing, like the ability, and then I left. And I never went up to the top and saw the big door with all the keys. Okay, yeah. So that took me a long time to actually get to. But that's where you learn what your actual objective is. Like, I think I'd gotten like two keys and was like, that's got to be good enough. Two keys? Dang, yeah, that's a lot.
I had all the keys before I knew what to do with them.
Yeah, it took me a very long time of just sort of like running around and checking areas that I had not seen, like with the map, which notably, anytime that you look at the game's Steam page, it's like this is just the last update for the game. The map didn't exist since forever. Like, it was just added recently, which is crazy to me, because the map was, like, a key element to me eventually figuring out how to actually finish the game.
Yeah, I mean, even I, Andy Kinnick, hater of maps, think it would be awful to play this game with no map.
Yeah, it's just, like, there is an element of... I think this is like the separation for like if you were any person, just throw a dart at the wall of all people who might hypothetically play this game. The hard line between like the casual player and the person who obsesses over this game has to fall on would not even want to finish this game without the map because you're given so little direction. And person on the hardcore side that's just like, I continue playing the game exclusively because I want to get better at the movement and right. like the movement. And that's what's keeping me going. Because, like, I enjoyed that stuff, but I definitely hit a point where I was like, I'm sick of doing the dash jump to get around faster, to go look at every corner of every room to figure out where I'm supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But I also notably am not a big Metroidvania fan. Like I don't even like Vanias really. I like Metroids. Like that's kind of my niche within the genre. And we've played some that I've liked. It's not like it's a genre that I outright hate, mm-hmm. but it's just not one of my favorites. And so I knew going in, like, that I was at a bit of a disadvantage. So I did kind of expect to come in and you'd be like, this game was great. And I liked it all the way through. And I was like, oh, now I have to like try and defend why like Metroidvania is in my bad sense of direction and shit. But, but I'm glad we agree at least on that. It feels directionless a bit, especially around the midpoint.
Yeah. So I guess we brought up the keys. And so, like, one of, like, the wildest things that I did in this game was I got the Underbelly key before the Twilight Theater one. So I did not have the ability to shoot the projectile. So you're supposed to have that to hit the second switch. So I was like, I have no idea how to hit that switch, but I didn't want to leave. So I did, like, basically, like, speedrunner bullshit, but slow. where
slow runner,
like
bullshit.
If you're facing towards the back of the room where the key is, like there's like the far right corner pillar that you jump off to hit the first switch. I could like mm-hmm. jump at the wall in the corner and it was like kind of curved, so I could like wall ride around it and then jump off and kick and then like land on the platform with the key. And that actually wasn't that hard. The hard part was getting back. Like, it took me, like, so many tries to, like, because I had to, like, get up to the very top where the key was, like, long jump off towards the wall, and make sure, like, I got that slide, the wall ride, at the highest point of the jump, you know, and then go all the way to the edge of the wall and jump off at, like, the last second, but, like, before you go past it, and you just kick if you hit the jump button, if you go, like, too far past the edge of the wall. So you got to get it just late enough so that you can, like, get far enough without going too far. And then, like, there's this, like, one little platform that you can, like, if you have enough altitude, you can manage to kick it twice and then backflip and land on it. And it was, like, so hard. But I did it. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm a goddamn master of pseudo-regalia.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, like, that is the prime objective. Like, I definitely would want to be doing that. I will say the Underbelly Key was the last one that I got.
I kind of forgot.
I just forgot that the area existed for the most part. And then when I went back to find the key in it, because the second to last key I got was the one that was actually on top of the tower. Because I went up and found it. And I was like, oh, fuck, this has been here the whole time. And it has a little plaque that tells you where every key is. And I was like, right, the Underbelly.
Yeah, that would have been useful.
Yeah. so I eventually did go back to it and just kind of did it as intended with the with the thing. But I will say I did note, I was like, I bet you could do this without using the projectile.
Mm-hmm. You
can. And lo and behold, you definitely can, yeah. On the projectile, this is a very short topic of conversation that I'd like to have.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it. I hate that ability with everything in my heart and soul.
You barely have to use it.
Yeah, you only have to use it like four times, and that is a real godsend, because I despised using it. I hated that it moved you slightly forward every time that you did it. And I hated trying to steer the thing with a fucking controller. It just drove me insane to do.
Yeah, whenever I was trying to do like difficult platforming things, sometimes I'd accidentally click the right stick and it puts you into first person mode. First person mode is actually really useful for aiming that.
I did not find that to be true.
Oh, really?
I found that, well, I mean, that did help in the way that it made it possible, but it was still horribly imprecise, at least in my eyes. I might just suck at using it. I don't know. Give me a crosshair, I guess. That would be helpful. Anyway, that's all I had to say about the projectile, which gets the Kirsten Dunst Award for worst power up in the game.
But yeah, I did want to, speaking of the projectile, you have a weapon that you shoot that projectile out of. This game does have combat, and
yeah,
I thought it was interesting because there is a boss fight in the little tutorial dungeon area, but then there aren't any for the rest of the game till the end. So I was like, it was interesting, I thought, because like the combat feels not like a combat system. It instead feels like it's part of the healing system. Like, it always felt like the enemies were there just for you to fill up the magic meter so you could heal so that you didn't die. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because, like, you have things like, you know, like Super Mario 64, where you can, like, punch and kick enemies, but, like, you can just run around them, and you never really had to engage with them unless you want to, like, grab a coin from them or something. So, like, I thought that was kind of interesting that they kind of tied it to the health. So, like, I felt like it kind of made it work, even though it was really simple.
So, like, how Mario 64 kind of ties its enemies into the health system.
True, but, like, but more engaging, I think.
Yeah, no, it's obviously doing, like, a Hollow Knight kind of thing with the healing system, where using melee attacks fills up your health meter, and then you can, or not your health, your magic meter, and then you can use it in parts to heal missing HP. But then Hollow Knight has like combat challenges and enemies that are difficult to fight, and Pseudo-Regalia really doesn't. So it was an interesting inclusion. It's kind of like a thing that feels very unnecessary. Like this game could have gotten by with a much simpler combat system, especially once you get the projectile ability, which drains your magic when you use it.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, if you use it, it takes a bar of magic, and when you run out of magic, it just deals less damage. But nobody's using the projectile to do damage,
right?
If somebody ever has, I would be shocked to discover this. So it was like a weird situation where it was just like, this, all this does is drain my magic, so I can't heal. But then I really only healed whenever I was failing at platforming anyway. Yeah. So it was like a weird kind of like thing. Like I said, this could have been a much simpler health system. I feel like it is just there almost to pay homage to the Hollow Knight, essentially. Mm. Like they were like, I liked this health system and the way that it worked, and so I'm going to implement it. I mean, it's a game jam game. Like, they're just putting ideas together.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no reason to fix it, because it's perfectly serviceable. There's nothing wrong with this healing system. It's just very odd and kind of out of place in a game that has very little meaningful combat in it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it felt clever to me, at least. Because, like, rather than... Because, like, yeah, it lets you, like, engage with the platforming more. Like, I like that better, like, going and, like, killing some enemies better than, like, picking up coins or, like, having to, like, drink a health potion. Like, I don't... It felt kind of natural to me.
I mean, I do agree with that. But necessary? I don't know. Like, because when you're doing the platforming, right, like, you don't really get any magic power back.
No.
So it's not like the system is really interacting with it in that way. But I do agree. It does give you a much longer health bar. And like at the end of the game, like my heals were healing 2 pips apiece. And so it was like much easier to refill. I had like several, I think I ended with like 5 HP and then 2 HP per heal.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like 11. I had like 11 HP, which equals a lot of jumping off of platforms into poison.
Right.
So I could try things a lot of times. So yeah, it does work. And it does function in the game, I think, perfectly well. It's just, it is very odd, especially considering there are enemies like the eggs that right. don't yeah. do anything.
Yeah, yeah. They're just to give you magic back.
Right. Yeah. Were you expecting bosses after that tutorial? Because I definitely kind of was.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely was. But, like, that didn't last that long. Like, once I was, like, a third of the way in and there hadn't been any, I was pretty sure there weren't going to be any more.
Right. And then you get surprised by the fact that there is a final boss. Mm-hmm. They played us like fiddles. I mean, do you want to talk at all about that final boss?
I guess first...
Some sort of kind of touching on the combat system?
I mean, I guess we could now, or we could save it. I was going to suggest talking about the aesthetic of the game.
Oh, we'll definitely talk about
the aesthetic. If you want to tie a bow on the combat, I guess we can talk about the final boss now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was, like, surprisingly, like, serviceable, given that there hadn't been any, like, demanding combat. It wasn't hard, I don't know, like, but it was engaging, I thought. And it was kind of cool because I hadn't really gotten to use like the pogo ability a lot, and mm-hmm. it was like useful in that fight because the boss shot a lot of projectiles. You could like bounce around on them if you wanted to, so it like it felt like sad, like a different way to like use a lot of your moves, so I thought that was like satisfying.
Yeah, it does sort of end up capping off like the platforming mechanics a little bit by allowing you to sort of use them in a different way than you normally would. So I can agree with that. I also thought the boss was pretty serviceable, and it was interesting at least to see like come up. It is just sort of like, I don't, full disclosure, I don't get it. I don't understand like what the game's like implied narrative is about,
mm-hmm.
and like who that was. So to me, it did very much feel like you just like you know, if you like asked a 9-year-old to run your D&D campaign and they were just like, you're in a castle, and it's like, okay, I will do the challenges of the castle, now what happens? Now you're attacked by a witch. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'll fight the witch. And, like, that's a great way to spend an afternoon with your nephew, but, like, I don't know what that was supposed to be within the constraint, like, the construct of the game itself. But the boss was fun. And I think as I'm implying with that sort of narrative divergence, it did also bleed into sort of the aesthetics and the storytelling within the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because that sort of caps it all off. But It is. There's like a, the boss has like a cartoony element to it that made me have to like think back to how the game itself looks, because I'm so used to thinking about the game at that point in terms of like the geometry, like the actual level and the design, mm-hmm. as opposed to the characters that inhabit it, which are exclusively like weird, I mean, furry shit, right?
Yeah, like I didn't really understand the narrative either. I felt like I think she was the princess of the castle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like that could have used any kind of setup. Like I'm sure it was mentioned on a plaque or something, or by a goat kid around the world. But like, I feel like that could have been established at least a little bit better. But yeah, like it kind of has this kind of like dream world thing. Like the little speech she gives you at the end talks about like when I wake up, I'll write your name down or whatever, so I don't forget you or whatever. So yeah, there's some kind of metaphorical thing going on there, but it's pretty mm-hmm. hard, I think, to pick up on.
Yeah, but also, I mean, not also, but. To move on, yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. I think the thing that sort of like that motivates me to move past that is just like when I booted the game up for the very first time. I mean, I had like an understanding of the game. I think I may have been the one that suggested it like months ago or whatever. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think you made me aware of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about made you aware of it. You're a free thinking individual. but yeah, like the thing that this game has that I don't really like, I don't think visually this game does that much for me. And I jokingly called it furry shit earlier, and I feel like that's a common joke that people have sort of gone with for the game because the character is sort of like, I don't know. What's the word?
Thick?
Like low punny esque? Yes.
Yeah, she's like a goat bunny thing.
Right.
In like a
the game specifically calls out like right, yeah. Which doesn't help matters at all. but much like, you know, the furry community is not not a sexual inherently this character does kind of feel sexualized mm-hmm. in a way. So I don't even really want to associate it with the more peaceful, fun-loving furries. I want to talk about why this character has such a thick ass for no reason. And is, like, given animations, like, when she sits on the stool.
Mm-hmm.
And she does, like, a... Fuck, what's that famous 80s movie?
Flashdance.
That's not the one, but let's go with
it. Oh, really?
No, that's 100% the move that she does, is the move from Flashdance. It just wasn't what I was thinking of, but that's correct. yeah, I don't know. It's just real strange. And I didn't really find myself attached to the character in any way. Mm. But it was like, it is just like, it's on the front of the game and shit. Like, it's weird because like we talked about like Lunacid recently, mm-hmm. which has like a similar aesthetic goal in terms of making it look sort of like a retro PS1 kind of thing. But I do feel like the characters in that game also had issues because they some of them were very good, but other ones just like felt very out of place because they were just magical girl anime characters.
Mm-hmm.
This game, I think the character fits better, but I also feel like the aesthetic itself is pulled off with a lot less grace.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm very in the middle on it, but mostly, I guess, negative. This just feels like more of a mechanical thing to me.
Yeah, yeah. I found a costume early on that gave her pants. So I feel like I like the design a lot more with the pants, and there's just an option in the menu to put pants on her, which I thought was really funny.
Oh, I did not see that, but that is funny.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, no judgment or anything, but like it is like a strange phenomenon, like just how common. I don't know. I guess you call it fetishistic, like illustrations just in general among like certain online communities. Like I'm a graphic designer and have a drawing tablet, and when I was buying my most recent one, I was looking at reviews online. And, like, I challenge you to find a review for a drawing tablet where when they do the demonstration, they aren't drawing anime on it. Like, it's surprising, like, how common that stuff is. Like, I find it, like, genuinely fascinating.
Right.
But, yeah. So, like, I also found it a little gratuitous, a little too fan service-y for my taste, but, you know, to each their own. But like, I think, yeah, once I had the pants on her, like, I thought it was like a much cooler looking design. Cause like, I don't know, it made her look a little bit more like sleek and maybe a little bit more athletic, which felt a little bit more appropriate, I guess.
Right.
But, yeah, like I actually like the aesthetic of the world. Like, I don't know if it was just like headcanon stuff making it work for me, but like, it does feel kind of dreamy and like the, like N64 era, like some of the areas kind of reminded me of like Spyro areas and stuff. Whereas like the character models, I feel like felt a little bit more N64. So it felt like kind of like a mesh of a few different aesthetic inspirations. But like, I don't know, something about that like old game style really made it feel like a ruined castle. Like I feel like it added to that atmosphere. Like even though it is just like bigger empty levels, because that's like what games at the time had. This game's about making big jumps across those big open areas. I don't know. It felt like it kind of worked in the game's favor when it came to atmosphere. Like I like how like the outdoor areas have like fog and stuff. Like I don't know. There's something about it that like felt evocative and cool to me.
Yeah, I know, and I agree to some extent for sure. Like, I think particularly some of the larger areas, like the more outdoor or just like the cavernous indoor areas, I think do look pretty cool. I think they fit the aesthetic a lot better. Things like the Abbey and the Underbelly and stuff like that that are just sort of like bigger areas that have a lot more sort of like space. That are, it's like ambiguous in a way, mm-hmm. Kind of like it does like make your, because they use sort of like Silent Hill fog to sort of like block out things that are too far away. And so it does keep you thinking, like it lets your imagination kind of do more work.
Mm-hmm.
I think the enclosed areas, the smaller areas, feel very video gamey to me.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like less. I mean, it's not bad because those were video game areas that I enjoyed playing in. like this is, it's one of those games where the movement is very much based around the environment. Like you put this character with all of her abilities in a big open area with nothing to do. She actually can't go very far. Whereas you have like a convoluted setup of like a bunch of floating blocks. And now your character is able to scale great distances with it, with her moveset. And I think that shows like the smaller enclosed areas are much more fun to play in, but then the larger areas, which I think are more evocative and actually sort of do a lot with what the aesthetics are capable of, don't really. But I also don't think that this was really the focus of the game.
Yeah.
So like, it's not like I'm sitting here like, I guess like if you are like, I don't play anything but the newest, most graphically intensive games, maybe this is useful information to you. But I don't think anybody really is coming into that with that expectation.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And I just, dreamy castle is like a big, you know, huge dreamy castle. It's just, I think, is interesting.
Fair.
So, yeah, that kind of does it for me on a thematic level. But like the two most memorable areas in my head are like the bridge that leads to the tower. And like with the part in like the theater to open one of the switches to get the key, like you have to like go outside the castle and like platform on the outside of it. Like those are like the most memorable parts, and the little town, like the little castle town in the Bailey. So yeah, all the outdoor areas are the ones that stick out in my head.
Yeah, and they do look really good. Like it is, it the dreamy castle aesthetic is not something that I thought was a real aesthetic when you first said it, but is now I'm like, oh yeah, like 100% dreamy castle. Twilight Princess has a dreamy castle aesthetic.
Symphony of the
fucking
Night.
Symphony of the Night has a dreamy castle. Eco has a dreamy castle aesthetic.
Yeah. Eco's a good call. These are the beginning all... of the, I was going to bring this up. Because that's what I thought immediately. Like, the beginning of this game's a little reminiscent of Eco. The characters in the cages. Like, that first room
feels
exactly like the first room of Eco.
Man, what a strange group of games that this game pulled from for its inspiration. Dark Souls kind of has a dreamy castle aesthetic.
There are a lot of castles. Irithyll is a dreamy castle for sure.
All right, we've nailed it. Honestly, I don't really have all that much else to talk about on this one.
No, I think we can wrap it up.
Yeah. Got any notes on the music as the last thing to talk about before we wrap it up? As always.
The music I thought was charming in a few different ways. The music in the initial castle area that branches off to all the others felt kind of like an Undertale track almost. And then the one I think in the Twilight Theater felt like such like a genuine of the time like N64 era video game song. So those are the two that come to mind immediately, but like I think overall like I enjoyed it. It had like old game charm and didn't feel too forced, I don't think.
Yeah, I would say I agree with that. I think the one that comes to mind for me for a different reason is the theater, because I feel like I spent more time in that zone than like any other zone in the game. And the music got very on my nerves because it's very bombastic as compared to all the other tracks. I do agree with you. It is a good track on its face, but definitely one that wears on me. But the rest of it, yeah. Right now I'm having difficulty like really remembering specifics of any of the songs. But I do know that they work serviceably throughout the game. So pretty cool. Do we have front flip? do we have front flip thoughts?
My front flip thoughts are this game's really cool. Yeah, for being made by like a small team, I think really impressive. I was not prepared for it to be difficult. The how long to beat on this says like 6 hours. I call bullshit. No one's beating this in 6 hours, on their first playthrough. But anyway, so I had like my like low points with it in the middle where I wasn't quite sure how to go and the platforming hadn't fully clicked with me yet. But like otherwise, really cool and really satisfying movement. Like we said earlier on in the episode, it feels like it leans into being a platformer more than I've seen platformers do in a long time, at least to my knowledge. And that just felt really satisfying, and I really enjoyed my time with it. Like the platforming Metroidvania combo I think works really well here. If they're gonna make a pseudo Regalia 2, the only thing I would say is like maybe pace it out a little bit, ease you in a little at the beginning, like, you know. But otherwise, like, I thought this game was really impressive and cool.
I agree with most of that. I think most prescient, I would say, is the fact that this is a platform Metroidvania. I think they did mesh the genres pretty well. I think that there's an argument to be made that in order to reach like a wider audience that might include me, making the game a little bit less directionless, like focusing in on sort of the Metroidvania aspects that are more about tracking where you're going and giving the player like objectives, I think helps to push people along if they aren't the kind of person who is just going to get off on exploring the whole thing. But otherwise, though, I think it is like it is very good. The movement system is very clearly iterated on to polish into a very fine sheen. This is an extremely tight system and one that encourages experimentation on the part of the player, which is always very cool, and lets you do a lot of things that maybe you can't, you don't even expect that you're able to do. There are definitely paths that I found places that I am not sure if they were the intended way or if they were just the way I did them. And that experience made this game an extremely fun time to go through, I would say. Yeah, my biggest thing is sort of the same. I think that, like, easing the player in, giving the player a little bit more direction would make this game really sing as far as, like, a big thing. But, like you said, it's a small team. It was made in, like, a month and has been updated a few times. But you can't really expect the most polished thing ever. So for, like, what it is, I say this is an extremely cool and good game that I enjoyed. Thank you for listening to No Clip Pie this week.
What the hell is going on next time?
Next time is gonna be motherfucking Mystery May.
Am I gonna have to roll?
So you will. You are gonna have to roll. That's very that's weird and convenient. I have one right there.
You don't keep your dice on your desk.
If you don't know, from last year. Mystery May used to be a month that we did where we just played games that featured mysteries in them, and we plumb ran out of mysteries, and so we decided to change it around a little bit, and so now we have two tables that are going to be available on our website at noclippodcast.com, or on splattershot.pro, where you can find our Mystery May tables, to see what our chances are of rolling, on which games. Dice on the desk. Full disclosure, we haven't updated the table yet because I forgot this was happening. However, the table still exists, so what we will do is roll on it anyway, and we'll just re-roll if we hit something we already have hit.
Only two things got knocked off, right?
On Pocket, only one.
Okay, well, then
we did Rascal.
It doesn't even really matter, yeah. All right, let me know when you're ready for me to roll.
I am ready for you to roll.
All right, no whammies, no whammies. Six.
Oh, man. What an extremely good time we're about to have.
I can't tell if that's sarcasm or not.
Andy just rolled the die. Andy got a six, and now Andy's gonna have to tell me what is. I mean, I'm saying this because it's Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Just like always, I don't remember what genre the game is. So finally, I'm gonna fucking play it. So I'll know what it is.
Yeah, this is very exciting for me because Quadrilateral Cowboy is a game that I was recommended. Oh, I don't know. 9 years ago. Like so long ago. I just haven't played it at all, but it's just been sitting on our list for a million years. So, exciting to get to actually do it.
See, I thought this was something like Xenoclash where you had like played it in high school.
Nope. You're thinking of Xenoclash.
Oh, of course.
Oh, sorry, no, you're thinking of Xenoclash 2. But yeah, by the time this episode goes up, hopefully we will update the tables, and get that ready for anybody who's listening to actually take a look at. So,
hell yeah.
Until that time, you can get a hold of us. All of our contact information is on our website at noclippodcast.com or on splattershot.pro. There you can find links to our email address, our Twitter account, the YouTube channel where we post all of our episodes with video accompaniment, and You can watch any of our old episodes, including the ones that we've done on Metroid Dread.
Metroid Prime. Ori and the Blind
Castlevania
Forest.
Symphony of the Night. Yeah. Castlevania Symphony of the Night was the last episode where we had three hosts.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, on like an official basis. JJ has returned.
Yeah, if you're a newer listener, we used to have a third co-host.
Yeah. Well, now I'm sad. fucking press L2 to slam down on that like button, and then immediately press A to jump into the air and do a wall kick to ring that bell.
Get the underbelly key and do a sweet long jump off the top of the platform and hit that wall cling at the very top of the jump, and then go ride it as far as you can to the edge, but don't go too far, and leap off perilously. So you can kick off the platform and land on it and leave a comment in the comment section.
And scene.
This game was really cool. This game was so much fun.